I'm Montse Alvarado tonight on EWTN News Nightly. A day before their meeting in Alaska, President Putin praises President Trump, what he said and what tomorrow could bring. A twist in the trial of Jimmy Lai, why closing arguments scheduled for today are postponed. A Virginia school district is accused of arranging abortions for students without parental consent. Now a criminal investigation is underway. We have the details. Plus, celebrating our mother. We'll look at some beautiful pieces of art to help prepare us for the solemnity of the Assumption of Mary. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the feast of St. Maximilian Kolbe. Our top story tonight. With just hours to go before President Trump and Russian President Putin travel to meet one another for a face-to-face summit, today, President Trump tells reporters in the Oval Office he thinks Putin will make peace. He said the same about Ukrainian President Zelensky. Still, whether the summit can bring about an end to the unending and horrific fighting in Ukraine remains a big uncertainty. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen?
Monse, good evening to you. When President Donald Trump arrives in Anchorage, Alaska tomorrow, it could be a key moment in the war in Ukraine, or it could go nowhere fast.
President Donald Trump tells journalists,
"We have a big meeting. And it's going to be, I think, very important for Russia, and it's going to be very important for us, and important for us only that we're going to save a lot of lives."
And when President Trump meets Friday with Vladimir Putin,
"I think it's going to be a good meeting, but the more important meeting will be the second meeting that we're having. We're going to have a meeting with President Putin, President Zelensky, myself, and maybe we'll bring some of the European leaders along, maybe not."
Today, Putin praised President Trump's efforts to end the war.
"To tell you about the stage we are at with the current American administration, which, as everyone knows, is making, in my opinion, quite energetic and sincere efforts to stop the hostilities, stop the crisis, and reach agreements that are of interest to all parties involved in this conflict."
Speaking at the State Department, Secretary of State Marco Rubio said President Trump is the president of peace.
"He wants that war to end. He's going to do everything he possibly can. If he sees an opportunity to talk about achieving peace, he's going to pursue it. And we'll know tomorrow at some point, as the president said, probably very early in that meeting, whether something is possible or not. We hope it is."
British Prime Minister Keir Starmer, meanwhile, hugged Ukrainian President Zelensky after talks in London today. Both Zelensky and the Europeans worry that the bilateral summit would leave them sidelined. And as the war in Ukraine drags on, along with scenes of fighting, death and destruction, today, one of joy and relief, Ukraine securing the release of 84 people from Russian captivity, including both soldiers and civilians. Ukrainian POWs arriving in buses and greeting each other. Russia saying it too had received 84 soldiers as part of a prisoner exchange.
President Trump believes Putin would like to see a deal. And President Trump also adds that if he were not president, that Putin would take over all of Ukraine. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Thanks so much, Owen. Friday's summit with President Trump and Russian President Putin will take place at a U.S. military base in Anchorage, Alaska. Once a Russian colony, Alaska was sold to the U.S. in 1867 for $7.2 million. That's around $150 million today. Russia's decision to sell Alaska was motivated by its need to pay off debts from the Crimean War. Kirill Dmitriev, who will be part of the Russian delegation during Friday's talks, highlighted that shared past on social media. He posted photos of Russian Orthodox churches that were built in Alaska in the 19th century and still stand today. For more, let's bring in Cameron McMillan. He's a research analyst at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy Center on Military and Political Power. Thank you so much for being with us. Now, today, President Trump said he's convinced the Russian president wants to make a deal. But now the question is, what kind of deal that could be? What do you know about it?
Well, we know that the president certainly seems pretty optimistic going into the deal, but we also know the actions and the words coming out of the Kremlin leading up to this meeting. And similar to the past few years, the Kremlin remains committed to its maximalist goals of subjugating Ukraine and has not really shown any signs of good faith in negotiations. We've seen out of European leaders the demand for first a ceasefire, an unconditional ceasefire, as well as the fact that Ukraine needs to be involved in these negotiations, especially any that deal with potential cessation of territories.
Well, in any negotiation, President Trump seems to use economic incentives. He's threatened sanctions against Russia a number of times, but he hasn't followed through. What leverage does the president have with Putin?
The president and the United States have a lot of leverage that, unfortunately, we're not using right now. We've seen, though in a positive step, the administration willing to now sell weapons to Ukraine, we have not provided new aid that has not already been approved in the previous administration, as well as additional sanctions, secondary sanctions, and tariffs on countries that buy Russian oil. And these things could bring severe pressure on the Kremlin. And like you just said, the president has made these ultimatums, and we recently just passed one without additional sanctions coming on. And hopefully, if these talks do not yield results, the president will not hesitate this time to use it.
Really quickly, just what is it that could we learn or glean from the reality that Zelensky is not at the table? Is that also part of this balancing act that President Trump has?
I'm not sure it's so much of President Trump's balancing act. It's certainly a goal of Vladimir Putin in order to sideline the Ukrainians from the negotiations, in order to, frankly, get invited to American soil to meet with the president of the United States and present himself as an equal to the president of the United States. But we've seen out of the Europeans a commitment that Ukraine has to be involved in these negotiations. We've seen some signals more recently from the White House that they agree with that, and hopefully they stay with that commitment and present a united front to the Kremlin that, at the end of the day, it's not the United States or anybody in Washington that's going to hand over X, Y, or Z land in Ukraine. And more importantly, the Ukrainian civilians that live in that territory would then have to live under Russian occupation.
We just talked about that relationship between the U.S. and Russia in that territory, the reality of Alaska. What is the significance of holding the meeting there?
Well, there's certainly a lot of visual significance in terms of the fact that the president is not going to Russia. They are not meeting in a third country. But in addition to what you showed earlier and just mentioned, that there's this so somewhat shared, I guess, history of Alaska, there is also, coming out of Kremlin propaganda, claims that we never should have sold Alaska. Alaska's rightfully ours. And frankly, rhetoric that's really reminiscent of how they talk about Ukraine and some other countries that were part of the Russian Empire previously and are now independent nations.
Well, this is something we'll be watching very carefully. Thank you so much, Cameron.
Thanks for having me.
Ahead of President Trump's meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin, lawmakers are making their voices heard on what they hope President Trump does and doesn't do. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has the latest. Eric, what do you have for us?
Good evening. The meeting between the two leaders is provoking mixed reactions up here on Capitol Hill. Some lawmakers are worried that President Trump will make concessions. Others say that he shouldn't just settle for a ceasefire, warning Putin will just start up the war again. And some Democrats say President Trump is showing weakness by even meeting with the Russian leader on U.S. soil.
And I hope we got something out of this. Putin is a war criminal. Mm-hmm. This is not a show of strength to allow him to fly into the United States, to land here to negotiate with our president.
The fact that Vladimir Putin now has a meeting with the president of the United States in the United States, in Alaska, that doesn't involve Ukraine is a massive coup for Vladimir Putin.
Some Republicans worry that President Trump will make concessions like land swaps, which he has said is possible.
So I hope we see a Trump that we've seen in the last month, not the President Trump that we've seen the first 7 or 8 months of his presidency, where I thought he was way too weak on Putin. And so we want to see a stronger Trump standing up for freedom and standing on the right side of this war.
Other Republicans hope the meeting will encourage U.S. allies to take more action against Putin.
Putin has just been tapping us all along the way. The time has come for this to come to an end. One of the things that I want to see happen is I want to see our allies impose sanctions as well on Russia. Stop buying Russian oil and gas.
Congressman Adam Smith says he doesn't expect much from the meeting and worries it could harm our allies.
Trump is showing is division with our European allies and division with Ukraine. And when Putin sees that division, he sees it as weakness and an excuse to keep pushing forward. I mean, that's the biggest problem. All this effort to sort of sidestep all European allies, sidestep Ukraine, sends the wrong message.
Congress is standing by to impose even more sanctions on Russia if President Trump asks them. So there's a lot at stake. From the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Secretary of State Marco Rubio says the U.S. is set to designate the Muslim Brotherhood as a terror organization. Rubio made the comments in an interview earlier this week. He says the State Department is constantly reviewing groups and that they should be designated as terror organizations. He added that the Muslim Brotherhood is, quote, of grave concern. In a victory for President Trump, a federal appeals court ruled the administration can continue to freeze or terminate billions of dollars that Congress had earmarked for foreign aid spending. The president issued the order on his first day of office, and so a group of international aid groups that were recipients of grants from USAID sued the administration in February. The decision reversed a lower court's preliminary injunction. In a split decision, the judges ruled the plaintiffs did not have legal standing to bring this lawsuit. California Governor Gavin Newsom says California will move forward with drawing new congressional maps through a referendum by voters ahead of next November's midterm elections. Newsom adds these maps will end the Trump presidency and allow Democrats to take control of the U.S. House of Representatives.
We're asking the voters for their consent to do midterm redistricting in 2026, 2028, and 2030 for the congressional maps to respond to what's happening in Texas, to respond what Trump is trying to excite.
The announcement comes after Texas Republicans' efforts to redraw congressional maps in their party's favor. 33 Texas House Democrats left the state to stop legislative proceedings and held up in Illinois. Now an Illinois judge has rejected a lawsuit filed by the state of Texas, which asked the court to hold the Democrats in contempt and to domesticate Texas warrants. We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, including a deadly outbreak. Sudan battles its worst cholera surge in years. Could the disease cross borders? We ask an expert. And explosive claims in Virginia. The governor probes whether school staff took students for abortions without parental consent. Closing arguments in the national security trial of pro-democracy advocate Jimmy Lai in Hong Kong have been delayed by a typhoon. The typhoon arrived today with heavy rain and winds. Thus far, there are no reports of damage nor injuries. Lai, a Catholic, has been detained since December 2020. Reports say he is being denied medical care and even the Eucharist. It's not immediately clear when the trial will resume. The African country of Sudan, already battered by war, is now suffering through its worst cholera outbreak in years. According to the charitable organization Doctors Without Borders, since the outbreak began last year, more than 100,000 suspected cases have been reported, and there have been nearly 2,500 cholera-related deaths. Joining us now is Matthew Smith from the Sudan Relief Fund. Matthew, thank you for joining us. Can you describe for us the current situation in Sudan?
Well, the humanitarian situation in Sudan is abysmal. I would classify it as the worst humanitarian crisis on Earth right now. A lot of that's being driven by the massive displacement of people due to the ongoing civil conflict between the RSF, the Rapid Support Forces, and the SAF, the Sudanese Armed Forces. And the massive amount of displacement is leading to terrible health outcomes like we've seen recently with this cholera outbreak, which is mainly due to bad water or contaminated food, largely preventable, but we're seeing it in large numbers because of the poor humanitarian conditions.
Well, how often do outbreaks like this one happen? Is this rare?
Well, in instances of war, I would say that it's somewhat common because you have large amounts of people that are gathered in camps, or what frankly I think can hardly be described as camps. That's, I think, honestly putting it a little bit too nicely. It's just large amounts of people gathered together with little to no sanitation, little to no clean water. And so what you see then is a very quick and rapid spread. It happens very quickly. And then once it starts spreading, if there is not an immediate response, it can just spread like wildfire.
You mentioned that Sudan is in the midst of a civil war, and we've reported on that over the last couple of weeks. Many refugees have fled to the city of Al-Fashir, close to the town of Tawila, a hotbed of this outbreak. Could we see the number of cases spike because of these moves?
Absolutely. We're seeing, and even closer to the border of South Sudan, we're seeing cholera outbreaks. And I think it's largely due to this movement of people that you just referred to. Oftentimes, people are just trying to escape a bomb falling into their home. And so they leave and often find themselves in these terrible camps with deteriorating humanitarian and health conditions, and they're willing to take the risk. And so we're seeing all across Sudan, we're seeing that cholera spread pretty quickly.
What's being done there to provide aid, to provide relief?
Well, you can do a few things. Primarily, you'd love to get vaccinations in. There is, and it can usually be administered pretty simply at a young age. But outside of that, you can administer oral rehydration. But really, long-term and big picture, you need to have humanitarian agencies come in and actually provide reliable clean water sources. So a group like Sudan Relief Fund, other organizations similar to ours are drilling water wells. That's really the primary way long-term to stop cholera. But in the midst of civil war, it can be challenging, especially for aid groups, to get into these parts where there is such need and actually provide this water. But in the meantime, you try to mitigate with things like vaccines and oral rehydration.
Well, we'll be looking out for your analysis in the future as the situation continues to unfold. Thank you so much for your work, Matthew. Back in the United States, Governor Glenn Youngkin orders an investigation into claims that staffers at a Virginia school arranged abortions for students without parental consent. Local media say the Republican governor is asking Virginia State Police to look into the claims. There are also allegations that staffers at Centerville High School in Fairfax County may have used public funds for the abortions back in 2021. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, a first from Pope Leo. The Holy Father has a private lunch with the poor for the first time. We have the details. Plus, it's the eve of the Assumption of Mary, a look at a 17th century masterpiece that brings this powerful scene to life. First time, Pope Leo XIV will be hosting a private lunch with people experiencing poverty at his summer residence in Castel Gandolfo. EWTN Vatican correspondent Valentina Di Donato met with some of the people that are eagerly getting ready to welcome the Holy Father.
I'm very emotional because it's the first time I will be near the Pope. So I think it's a beautiful thing. It will be beautiful that he will be with us, quote-unquote, poor.
Massimiliano lives on the streets, not far from Castel Gandolfo, the Pope's summer residence. On Sunday, he will dine with his new neighbor, Pope Leo XIV, along with 100 other people experiencing poverty. They were just told about the Mass and private lunch with the Holy Father, so they are cleaning and putting the final touches on their little chapel of the Madonna of the streets to get ready for the big event. Caritas Albano is the diocesan charitable agency coordinating the event. The director tells me the plight of the poor is more stark than meets the eye.
The situation here, compared to other Italian cities, you don't perceive the poverty of the homeless. The numbers are much lower compared to bigger cities, but we find a lot of poverty within families that are almost embarrassed to ask for help.
Sunday will be the first official meeting that the Holy Father will have with the needy and the struggling. They will have an opportunity to share their life stories and their hopes.
There are many things I would like to tell him. I want to return with my family, because I can't take this kind of life anymore. Just this. I wouldn't want to ask for anything else.
Non vorrei chiedergli altro.
Pope Leo will visit the shrine of Santa Maria della Rotonda in Albano, then host a lunch at Castel Gandolfo's Borgo Laudato Si. All of this was organized after the Bishop of Albano, Vincenzo Viva, spoke directly to the Pope about this wish of the Caritas.
The Pope answered me in a personal meeting and said he was very happy for this meeting and so gave me the assignment to organize with our Caritas with very little time. Then the possibility to also have the lunch along with the Mass in the beautiful context of the Borgo Laudato Si.
Nel bellissimo contesto del Borgo Laudato Si.
This meeting with society's poor serves as an opportunity to remind us all that poverty isn't just about lacking material things.
Ma ci sono tante altre povertà.
There are many types of poverty: relational poverty, psychological poverty, moral poverty, even spiritual poverty. So to meet a poor person, I believe for a priest, a Christian, a bishop, for a pope, is always a good experience, an important experience.
Bella e molto importante.
It's certainly an important experience to Massimiliano, who believes that a blessing from the Pope will help him start a new chapter of his life.
Molta speranza. Io ti ripeto.
I have a lot of hope. If the Pope gives me a blessing, I should start working in September. Hopefully that will allow me to reunite with my family back home. Well, maybe not with my son because he's a teen, but I want to spend the rest of my life next to my wife.
In Rome, Valentina Di Donato for EWTN News Nightly.
Tomorrow is the solemnity of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary. The scene has been depicted throughout the centuries in artwork. And as a preview, Tara Mergener spoke with Jem Sullivan, author of The Beauty of Faith, for her analysis of a masterpiece dating from the 17th century.
And for more, we turn to Jem Sullivan, Associate Professor of Practice at the Catholic University of America and the author of The Beauty of Faith. Jem, great to have you back. Before we start talking about this particular painting, I'd be interested to know, how long has the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary been depicted in artwork, and what are some of the oldest examples you can think of?
Thank you for having me, Tara. It's great to see you. It was Pope Pius XII who in 1950 formally defined Mary's Assumption as part of Catholic doctrine. But well before that, belief in Mary's Assumption was part of Catholic devotion for centuries. And from that long-held devotion, there were painters and sculptors, musicians and poets who brought to life, in paint and stone, song and in word, the Catholic belief in Mary's Assumption. So well before its formal definition by the Church, we have many beautiful hymns and works of art that offer reflect on Mary's Assumption. This is a visual catechesis on Mary's Assumption that we have in this 17th century painting from the National Gallery of Art. That's just one example.
About this painting from the studio of Heater Paul Rubens, what is the artist trying to tell us about the Assumption of Mary?
So this sketch by an anonymous artist is based on an altarpiece created by Peter Paul Rubens, the master Baroque artist of the 17th century. And Rubens often painted large biblical and religious scenes with dramatic movement and intense color, as we see in this replica, most likely completed by his assistants in his workshop. We see God assuming Mary into heaven as she's carried up by a host of angels. Everything in this scene is moving to where two angels hold a wreath of flowers to crown Mary as Queen of Heaven. And then below them, we see Mary's empty tomb surrounded by a lively group of biblical figures. There's prophets and apostles there. It's thought that the gospel women named Mary are also present. And then we see one of the apostles standing with his arms outstretched, raised to heaven in praise of God. And his perspective is meant to be our perspective as we join the Church's celebration of this sacred moment when Mary's earthly life draws to a close and she's assumed to heaven.
Wow. Well, how do you think we should view this masterpiece today? Are the themes from the 17th century still relevant as we speak?
Sure. You know, the Catechism of the Catholic Church tells us that God's work of assuming Mary, body and soul, into heaven continues God's great work in Mary's life. We know that Mary was the woman God chose to bear his divine son, Jesus. So in a way, Mary's entire life, from her immaculate conception to the Annunciation, to the birth, death, and resurrection of Jesus, to the moment of Pentecost, all of it was preparation for the Assumption of Mary. It was God's gift to Mary at the end of her earthly life. And so the artist's vision is reminding us that God desires that we follow in Mary's footsteps by our witness to faith as disciples of her Son, so that we too may join in that joyful praise of God, who is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, in the company of the angels, the saints, and Mary, Mother of God, Mother of the Church, and our Mother in faith.
Wow, Jem, amazing insight and information. Thank you so much. Jem Sullivan, Associate Professor of Practice at the Catholic University of America and the author of The Beauty of Faith. Thanks for joining us.
You're most welcome, Tara. Thank you.
And today is the feast of St. Maximilian Kolbe, and we'd like to toss it over to EWTN's employee chaplain, Father John Paul Mary, to tell us more about the heroic Franciscan.
Your addiction has taken control of your life? Check out this intercessor, first-class relic of St. Maximilian Kolbe. In Auschwitz, the Nazis had tried to starve him to death, not giving him food and water for weeks. And after trying to starve him, they actually pumped his veins full of carbolic acid, ultimately killing him. And after that, they took his body and burned it in Auschwitz. So there was not any first-class relics of him left, besides hair that one of the friar barbers had saved after a haircut. Amazing. We ask his intercession upon you, all those who are caught in any type of addiction in life. May his intercession free you in Jesus' name, the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Montse Alvarado. Good night, and God bless you. We'll be right back.